And that was Jane Siberry singing The Mystery at Ogwin's Farm. We're going to be talking about some mysteries down around Tumalo and a number of farms down that way. But first, I am Chris Andre. You're listening to KBOO, Portland 90.7 in Portland, Oregon, your community radio station. It is 10:32 a.m., and my guest this morning, I should also tell you that I'm in to do Earth Watch for Scott Forrester today. So my guest is Marianne Fellner down in Tumalo, and we're going to be talking about land use laws and the environment. This is an area of Oregon that we here in Portland, we think about it when we think about vacation. We don't think about it enough in terms of issues that affect the lives of people who live there and the land that they live on. In many cases, these are many generations who've owned a piece of land. And all of that now is going to be turned into a 2,000-acre resort. It's going to be a destination resort. It's going to have free golf courses. And it's going to have 950 condominiums and a whole lot of other stuff that the land just cannot carry. Marianne, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us. Could you just fill in the KBOO listeners a little bit about what's going on down there with this enormous resort? I first wanted to ask you a question that occurred to me, the most obvious one actually, is, so land use laws east of the Cascades were loosened because it's so hard to farm on land when there's very little water. So explain to me how you can have three golf courses on land that won't carry, an average farm.
The Destination Resort Overlay was originally created in 1992 in order to give an opportunity to have a use for land that wasn't able to support crops. The irony of it is that these lands primarily did not have water rights, and water rights in this region are premier. They date back to the turn of the century, and they're limited. It was tapped out like in 1920, all of the water rights were designated out of the Deschutes. The question then becomes, how much water can we take out of the Deschutes River and not turn it into, a dry ditch every season? So the water use is everything. The irrigation rights is everything. And what happens with this destination resort overlay, at the time, I believe that the region didn't anticipate this golf-centric destination resort approach. They were thinking more dude ranches, places to get away and take it easy. But what's happened is that having land adjacent to a golf course increases the value per lot tremendously. Golf courses don't make money. They lose money. They provide a platform for giving the highest priced lot other than waterfront property. Obviously, it's not waterfront property. Ironically, the Thornburg Resorts have decided that not only do they want three golf courses, three 18-hole golf courses that consume, over 1 million gallons of water per day each, but they also want to create 85 acres of lakes, a water ski lake, out in the middle of an area that has no water, no surface water, no water rights.
This is even worse than I had at first.
Well, it is. And the irony of it is, as well, is that there's this water law that was created over the past year. It was finalized that is about water mitigation, and what they're claiming is that so much water returns to the river through the groundwater, but it is a theory, and there are organizations that have these, like the Oregon Water Resources Division has come up with formulas saying that, okay, every time an acre of water is used, so much water returns to the groundwater, thereby returns to the river. It's a theory because if you are actually irrigating, the water doesn't go very deep into the ground, so.
And it's not. Don't you lose a lot through? A lot is lost through evaporation, wouldn't it?
There's a thing called evapotranspiration, and that is a formula that comes how much water is evaporated and also consumed by plants.
Uh-huh.
And but what's happened is that the resorts, they have no water rights, and so they have to accumulate water rights that are released from farmland that is, let's say, around Redmond, and the resort is fairly close to Redmond. So as the land falls into within urban growth, then water rights are released, and then the people that are interested in creating a destination resort where there is no water, then they acquire these rights. And so that has turned water into this high-priced commodity of trade. And so people are trading these water rights, and then they're manipulating the water rights, and then they're spinning the water rights so that they're saying, well, it goes back into the river. Now, in order to meet what people's expectations are, these resorts are also touting conservation methods, saying, don't worry, we're conserving the water. We're like great citizens. If you actually conserve the water, if you irrigate a golf course so that you're only feeding the roots of the plants, the water is only going a couple of inches at most into the soil. How does it get 500 feet into the aquifer?
Also,
how does it get there? And I keep asking, and I get patted on the head. People say, well, ma'am, there's a formula. And I was like, but how does this formula work? How does this water get sprayed on a golf course so that there's the minimum used in order to conserve water, but yet 40% of that goes into the ground? No. There's another conflict that has me crazy, and that's that these resorts apply for a quasi-municipal water right, which has a 40% consumption rate. They're actually irrigating, you know, tremendously more. They are not applying for the water that they're actually using. And so this quasi-municipal rating for all of this irrigation is not accurate, but yet I have not been able to get the Oregon Water Resources Division to, they acknowledge that it's not accurate, but if the laws are so that if the applicant applies for this, then they get approved on what they apply for. They don't get approved on what is reality.
So what about all the pesticides and herbicides that are used to keep golf courses looking like golf courses, basically?
Well, golf courses try to be, the new trend in golf courses is to be more, more environmentally conscious. So there is an attempt to use the minimal, but granted, yes, all of that goes into the ground, and there it is. I mean, we know what happens. I mean, you put this on repeatedly. Also, there are people that are using treated effluents on golf courses, mm-hmm. And how safe is that water? Well, they tout it's pretty darn good for irrigation, but then again, these things are adjacent to residences, so that's not been very well thought out.
It's very surprising to me. So would you say that this resort thing, the Thornburg Resort, is going to go on what was farmland, or was any of it just wild land?
It's the land itself is two parcels of private land that are surrounded by BLM land, about 25,000 acres of BLM land that stretches from north of Highway 126 that goes between Redmond and Sisters all the way down to just north of Tumalo. So it's this huge expanse that has a couple of scattered packages, and the land has never been farmable. It doesn't have the water. It doesn't have the arability of it. So it's been open range grazing land, and the grazing rights extend well into the BLM lands that surround it. So the holders, the owners of these lands, the Thornburg family, also held the grazing rights within the BLM. So it's like two islands of private property that sit upon a ridge. The Klein Buttes are, these beautiful hillsides and mountains and ridges, and granted they have spectacular views. And it's just a treasure of recreation for the people in this region. But it is private land, and they did get the zoning for that in 92. And so what the struggle has been for us as opponents has been to show that they do not meet the criteria as laid out within the destination resort zoning.
It seems like they keep changing it, though. I believe there was, wasn't there a decision on February 5th that further loosened land use laws to make it possible to have these colossal resorts?
Well, the application that the Thornburg people, and it's been a huge, I mean, the lawyers, the consultants, it's just mind-blowing how many people have been working on this application. So it's huge. It's literally like a foot and a half deep of paperwork. They have thrown in everything that they could conceive of that a developer might want to include in that application. So there's a lot of conflicting information, and we've poked holes in the data. They don't meet the criteria, but they managed to bully their way into having the decision of a county hearings officer, which denied their application. They managed to bully their way into threatening to sue the county because of a timeline discrepancy, and to place the entire decision before the Board of County Commissioners, which is a board of three individuals. And one individual knew that he loved it from the first time he heard about it. A second really did analyze the information, and a third person is fairly pro-development, and she thought, well, it sounds good to me. So Dennis Luke, the one commissioner that really did analyze the application, said that they don't meet the criteria. It's just not, it's not so right, and they've lowered the standards. So, by
Luke
approving this, they've approved all this and much, much more. And that's what's disturbing to us, is that they've thrown roads everywhere, water everywhere, conflicting information. The density is supposed to be a certain 2-to-1 ratio. They've come up with these ratios by spinning numbers, by saying, well, these cottages will be what's called lockout. So they get to qualify for overnight lodging because you can turn them into three places. So there's just been a lot of spinning. And, you know, we called them on the spinning, but it was approved. And so now our only alternative is to take it to LUBA, Land Use Board of Appeals, and take it to the state level and have the state analyze it. Because I think that there's a bias in Deschutes County. Deschutes County, economically, is very pro-resort. There's a lot of land that qualifies for destination resort, and the land prices here are crazy. And so people that are ambitious financially are trying to inflate the prices of land as much as they can, and by taking land that was for, you know, generations considered worthless, suddenly it's the hottest property in the region, and they're selling it to speculators. And Thornburg is already sold and reserved and parceled up and been packaging sales of these lots in anticipation of a tremendous land boom. And I don't know real estate law, so I can't say how, you know, it must be legal. I'm presuming it's legal.
I wouldn't necessarily, we might not necessarily assume that.
I know, but I'm going to be safe and say that I will think that they're, you know, abiding by.
It's an extraordinarily twisted and convoluted story. Some of the names that keep coming up in articles from the press, local press, down your way, down around Bend. Some of these people, their names, well, Linda Swearingen, former Deschutes County Commissioner, who is now a lobbyist for resort developers.
Yeah.
That name keeps popping up all over the place, as does...
Everywhere. She's a very, very hardworking, smart woman who is representing them to the fullest extent she can. She's very ambitious.
Well, I still find it hard to believe that they can seriously be thinking long term about the impact of this sort of development.
They're
in that part of the state. Because, I mean, there are, you know, if people, you know, people do throw around the idea that, well, there's a formula for this and that, and that will explain everything to you. There's also formulas that clearly predict the carrying capability of any given piece of land. That's taking into account all sorts of factors, availability of water, well, sustainable practices, what it's going to do, what kind of impact on like the wildlife, the creatures that live there. Mm. And land can only carry a certain amount of life, you know, given what...
The amount of development proposed on this is absurd. It's 15 miles of sewage pipe, you know, it's like...
And that's going to be leaving where?
Of lakes. There's 1,000 single-family homes, 400 condos, you know, clubhouses, lakes, hotels, community centers, commercial developments, restaurants. It's just as much an amphitheater. You know, just they have included in their application every conceivable form of recreation. A water skiing lake in the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
How does that work?
How does that work? Good.
And it's all pumped out of the aquifer. And there are theories that the Deschutes Aquifer is an endless resource. I just don't believe it's possible. It's affected by snowpack. We know how every year it fluctuates. You can look at scientific charts. They're not taking good science. They're taking, you know, looking for the words they long to hear as far as supporting their argument. But it's a very short-term solution to people that have the land. They want to make a quick buck. The thing is, the destination resort zoning states that one of the criteria is it cannot be within 25 miles of a region that has a 100,000 person population. Bend will reach that 100,000 point probably within, you know, 5 to 7 years. So people right now with these large parcels of dry open spaces that have that, you know, just 5 to 7 years where they can build something this close to the city. Once it's approved and they're underway, they've got it made.
Yeah, the sky's the limit after that.
Right, once they have their county approval. And so taking this buckshot approach to the application makes it a parcel that they can then sell with the county approval. They can just flip it. There's a lot of what's called flipping real estate going on in Central Oregon. They can take this 2,000-acre resort with the county approval and market it across the nation to anybody ambitious. Every time a helicopter goes by over Tumalo, people are, there goes Donald Trump. So, you know, the rumors are rampant, but we're thinking that it's probably going to be sold as a package deal to someone that, you know, has only flown over this region in their helicopter, and I've seen them, I've, you know, given them the traditional wave, and it's going to impact the people in this region, this rural community, forever. The traffic will just be a tremendous impact. It's 10 years of continuous construction.
I'm guessing airports and that sort of thing, helipads and so forth.
Well, they wanted a helipad, and that was one thing that we were able to successfully deny.
Good.
Of course, it's, you know, it pales in comparison to the battle over the water. And the water problem is a statewide problem. The water mitigation laws are statewide mitigation laws. And so we're affected by it. We're setting a precedence. However, it's got to be handled at a state level, that those water mitigation laws have been called a shell game by organizations such as Water Watch, which has been fighting this for years. But there's a lot of power and a lot of money behind making the water laws support rampant development.
This, too, I mean, in some ways, land like this that we're talking about, where this Thornborough Resort's going, it's not just important or beloved to people in Bend. It's you know, a statewide, it's sort of a legacy. It's what people really love about Oregon is, mm-hmm. You can go down to these lovely sort of high desert, beautiful places, and they're worth more to the state undeveloped than developed. Some people might argue. I find it amazing to me that this has gone on. Talk a little bit, if you wouldn't mind, about some of the apparent backroom, I guess there's no other way to say it, backroom dealings, that, and where now you're going to go from here after the recent county commission vote that seemed to open the floodgates. No pun intended, of course.
Yeah, the application has been going through the public process, and it was denied back in the summer. There's a timeline where there has to be this approval, this 150 days, and so the attorneys, the developers have a cast of, you know, extremely high-powered, high-paid attorneys, and so they threatened the county and pushed that the ruling should be made by the three county commissioners over the Christmas holidays. And so they had this, like, a couple-of-week window that went from December 20th to December 27th where people could give input. And it was extremely hard to rally the community to do any more work on this between, you know, those dates, the 20th and the 27th of December. People are pretty preoccupied. So they were able to get this to the county commissioners, who are, like, lords. They don't actually have to do anything, but they can do what they want. And so they... two out of three wanted to pass it, you know, easily. So, you know, what has happened behind the scenes, you know, one can only imagine, but there's a lot of, you know, pro-growth politics going on here, and though there are so many people that are pro-environment, when the people in power are pro-development, we're all working within the laws. The law says that those three have, you know, that much power. So it's passed. We have to take it to the state level, and we have to take all, we have to be vigilant about the laws for our environment at the state level. There's been a statewide attempt to loosen up land use laws. Measure 37 is a disaster over here.
It is here, too. Yeah.
Oh, it's just unbelievable. And now the attempt is to remap, to open up the opportunity to change the destination resort map as it exists and enable people to fold more land that is currently not zoned destination resort into destination resort. If people have large enough parcels, they want in on this. And so this attempt to open up the remapping process is another cause. We're just consumed. People that really are caring and informed are consumed by one issue after another, one battle after another, just to keep things within a manageable growth.
Yeah, so you're going to be, so people, activists down your way or will be taking this struggle to Salem? And
we'd like to. We're trying to do some fundraising. We have a wonderful attorney, Paul Dewey, is working for us. He is the prominent land use attorney here. Everyone is calling him to help them with all of these issues that are going on. There's so many, but we do hope to take it to LUBA, but we're trying to fundraise. It's very challenging to be able to match funds with these developers. It's mind-boggling how large a David and Goliath story this is, that, you know, we want to carry on with this. We don't want to give up, but it is a matter of how much, you know, can we finance.
It's, right.
And it's important. It's setting a precedence. It's not just about Klein Buttes, and it's not just about this particular parcel. It's setting the precedence for the direction of all development.
It's not an isolated incident, too. And I think that as simply by virtue of what this project, this development is, it's a destination resort, and it is isolated. If something like this were going on, oh, say, on the outskirts of Multnomah County, people would be up in arms. There would be all kinds of demonstrations. There would be a huge public outcry. But so much of this is sort of out of sight, out of mind. People in Portland go down Central Oregon, go hiking and so forth, and then they go back to Portland. And I think that there's not a great deal of awareness of what we as Oregonians stand to lose when we allow land use laws just, you know, to be tampered with in an ad hoc way by developers. I don't think we realize, it hasn't quite hit people yet, how much we really are going to lose when we lose.
as Americans, we believe strongly in personal property rights. And that's the battle, is it's the battle of open public space versus the right for an individual to, you know, use or profit from their land in the way that they choose. So people are looking to, you know, make a quick profit. And in our community in Tumalo, it's so sparsely populated that how many people can you rally? If we get 120 people to a land use meeting, that's a lot of people out of our community. That's a lot of, you know, concern. People are, you know, we have a, like, probably 90% support in our community, but we aren't a densely populated area. We're an area of large acreages and hay farms and, you know, small horse properties, but we're all people that are passionate about living in this place that has the beauty and the open spaces that, you know, we moved here for. I feel very protective. I moved here for the community, and I will protect my community.
What can we do, though? Tell us, you do have various benefits, and you do have various activities. As far as Portland is concerned, we'll definitely want to invite you to come back and chat some more and perhaps open the phone line so that listeners can dialogue. But
we
right
need to support Water Watch. Water Watch has worked on the behalf of Oregon's water laws, you know, vigilantly, but they need financial support to be able to legally work on these laws and set things up so that they are more conservation.
Do you have any events coming up that for people who are able to get away and get down there? Do you have anything coming up that we should know about?
No, you know, unfortunately this Thornburg Resort has been going on for about a year, and at this point we've exhausted our ability to fight it through the Deschutes County. It has to go to state level, and if anybody wanted to help us financially to challenge this at LUBA, it would be beneficial to the entire state. We have a small organization called the Triangle Lands Conservancy that is doing some fundraising specifically just for this. The Triangle Lands, there's an area called the Golden Triangle here, Sisters Redmond Bend. We need to just have some financial means to march this stuff through the legal system. So
we'll put all your information at the front desk, so if people call in and want to help, they'll be able to get hooked up with the right resources.
Mm-hmm.
My guest this morning has been Marianne Fellner. She is an activist and an artist living down in the Tumalo area. We've been talking about land use laws and water. My name is Chris Andre, and you are listening to KBOO in Portland, Oregon, 90.7, your community radio station. The time now is 11 o'clock. We have Democracy Now! Coming up. And once again, I do want to thank Marianne Fellner for joining us this morning. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Anytime.
This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212 or on the web at radiocab.net.
From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
A controversial counterterrorism program at the Defense Department, known as Total Information Awareness, which lawmakers thought they'd halted more than 2 years ago, has actually been continuing under a different name with the same contractors at a research facility housed at the National Security Agency.
Total Information Awareness lives on. We'll speak with the reporter who broke the story. Then we'll look at the U.S.-run prison, where hundreds of men have been held for years without charge. No, not Guantanamo, Bagram in Afghanistan, and it's growing.
As calls to close Guantanamo base get stronger, the U.S. administration is expanding another gulag, Bagram, Afghanistan. Over 500 prisoners are in Bagram under primitive conditions with no legal rights.
We'll speak with Michael Ratner, president of the Center for Constitutional Rights, and Clive Stafford Smith, who's represented prisoners at Bagram. Then we'll talk to Maher Arar, the Canadian citizen who was detained by the U.S. government and sent to Syria, where he was jailed and tortured.
When I arrived there, I just didn't believe it. I thought first it was a dream. I was crying all the time. I was disoriented. I wished I had something in my hand to heal myself, because I knew I was going to be tortured, and this was my preoccupation. That's all I was thinking about when I was on the plane.
A U.S. federal judge has dismissed a lawsuit Maher Arar filed challenging what the government calls extraordinary rendition. Others call it kidnapping. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.